Greetings, boys and girls. Welcome back to Brian Tells Stories, live from my back garden. Yes, it's sunny in Ireland, so I have to spend every waking moment outside in the sun. Anyway, sorry about the delay between episodes, as I've been a bit on the busy side. I do have other things to do in my life, but besides making podcasts for you, there's my dog. That's the problem with recording outside. He sees a bird, so it's understandable that he's got to bark at it. Anyway, those things are done now, so now I have nothing better to do than make podcasts for you guys. Anyway, on today's episode, we have a good one. It's worth the wait. I'll begin with asking you, the listener, a question. If there's something strange in your neighbourhood, who are you going to call? Not the Ghostbusters, as they're a fictitious group from a movie. But if you were located in the general Auckland or New Zealand area... Sorry, my dog is barking again. Ozzy, shut up! Sorry. If you were located in the general Auckland, New Zealand area, you can call Haunted Auckland. They have gone over to Australia, so I don't want to minimise their potential investigations. But I don't think they're going to come over to Ireland, which I know a lot of you are listening from. Anyway, Haunted Auckland are paranormal investigators who seek and search for all things ghastly and ghouly. They were nice enough to sit down and have a chat with me, and they discuss how they got into it and share some of their spooky experiences. But we begin by asking who and what Haunted Auckland are.
Haunted Auckland is a group that was started up by myself to further my own personal research, and I wanted to hook up with a few other people that also had an interest in finding out more answers. So we just pulled people together, various people of different ilks and professions and skills, and took it from there. Just went out on investigations and to see what we could see.
Mm-hmm. How did you get into it?
Yeah, I've been into it since I was a child. As soon as I could read, I was reading about ghosts and UFOs and the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot and all that. So I've always been interested in things out of the norm, anything unusual, anything strange, anything that hasn't been researched properly. I've just developed through the years, just got into it more and more.
Was there anything in particular that set you off on this sort of...
I saw a few slight things in the past, nothing too amazing, but just things that just kept my interest going. And every time I'd see a photograph in a book, or read another story or a news article, that would just, you know, add a little bit more to my enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how did you find the rest of the team?
Just through the internet, really. Just looking at through general websites and forum boards and discussion boards, and just pulling out people that were genuinely showing an interest and they were motivated to actually post on these sites and actually ask questions and try and give answers, and just people that were motivated enough, enthusiastic enough to... just take part in it all and actually get involved with the scene, get involved in the field,
mm-hmm.
by contributing.
Okay. And there's a technical term, paranormal investigator, is that? Because I saw you don't want to be called Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
It showed up a few times.
We prefer researchers, but yeah, we do investigate, so investigators does help. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's, give me the process. Do I phone you guys and be like, I think I've got a ghost, or what sort of happens?
Well, people contact us either via Facebook or via our website. We've got contact forms, and they'll just give us a bit of information on who they are, and they're might be having problems around the home, things that they can't explain, sort of odd noises in the night, seeing shadows, that type of stuff. And so they'll get in contact with us by the website or Facebook, and we will, through phone calls and emails, just sort of work out what's happening, and then go out and do a site visit. Usually, just initially, it's a couple of hours just to sit down with the home's occupants and discuss what's happening with the around the home and the issues that they're having. And from there, we often go and do a second investigation, which would be an overnighter. It's kind of at the owner's convenience if they can get away for the weekend or something and allow us to come in and do an overnight investigation. And that's when we sort of collect all our evidence and photographs and audio.
Mm-hmm. Is it common? Do you get a lot of people contacting you?
Not a huge number. It's all sort of through word of mouth. People, I mean, we can be searched on Google. It's not a common service, and I think a lot of people don't realise that there are groups out there who are willing to come and assist them and investigate for free. So because the paranormal tends to be a little bit of a taboo with some people in some cultures, they don't realise that they can actually reach out to groups for help, and that we're not going to start trying to charge them or extort money out of them or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all just free to further our research.
Okay, so can you talk me through, you go to the house, what's the process? Talk me step by step. I phone you and say, shadows are appearing in the bathroom.
Yeah, well, we try and get a bit of information over the phone or via email, just to, so we know what we're up against, so we know what sort of equipment to bring and how many people would be required. We don't want to bring too many people into the house or building if it's not needed. So we do a sort of general question and answer session via email, and then we just set up a time, go see them, have an interview with the clients. They show us around the house, around the building, show us the hot spots where things have been seen, things have been heard, and then we just set up equipment and set up a bit of a plan of attack and try and monitor as much as we can. We video and audio record the whole environment, so the atmosphere, everything, that just basically the general atmosphere gets recorded, whether it be just audio recorders just recording a room or video cameras just recording an empty room. We also have cameras, hand photo cameras roaming around as well, sort of people taking photographs of everything. Every photograph that gets taken is a chance of capturing something, so we take as many as we can. We take audio of everything we can, video of every place we can. We just try to document as much as we can with data meters and, you know, electromagnetic meters and thermometers, and just to document every item, every particular aspect of that building.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk me to some of the equipment that you use? So do you want to?
So a lot of it's about gathering a baseline recording to see what the place is like normally, and then from there anything that changes or is over and above that normal environment, that's the type of stuff we focus on looking at.
Okay. And can you talk to me about the specific equipment that you use, like the thermometers and whatnot? How do they help you?
Well, we had things, for instance, electromagnetic field detectors. So an electromagnetic field detector detects changes in local magnetic field and can also pick up electrical currents and things like that. So, for instance, most household appliances, computers, fridges, they give off a certain electromagnetic field. Now, these fields can, if they're strong enough, for instance, overhead power lines or power boxes, can cause people to feel uneasy and feel paranoid. It generates feelings of paranoia. It's much like having electrical stimulus to the brain. It,
really?
Can trigger certain parts of the brain into feeling certain conditions. And it makes you feel like there's something present that you can't necessarily see or feel. But you feel like there's a presence, and that can explain a lot of hauntings. We have found people who have reported paranormal hotspots within their homes, and we'll go in there and find a huge power box sitting right outside the wall. It's giving off a large EMF field that can't explain it. On the other side of the coin, if there is very little EMF, we're on the lookout for sudden changes, spikes. There is a certain school of thought that says that spirits or ghosts will give off an electromagnetic field when they're present or attempting to manifest themselves. They build energy. And if you get fluctuations where our EMF meters spike above the norm, that can indicate possible spirit activity.
Okay. So so sometimes when people feel this presence, it could just be the...
It could just be something in the natural environment. There's a number of factors, like the EMF, other things like infrasound. If you've got factories with wind turbines nearby, they can generate low levels of sound which are below the human range of hearing, but you can feel them within your body. Anything below 20 hertz you can't hear, but your body can feel and react to them, and they can cause odd sensations and feelings of being touched or present, presences within the house. And so it's not always ghosts that could be causing things. There's a lot of stuff in the natural environment that we have to rule out first.
Okay, that's quite cool that you're not just rushing in being like, it's a ghost, everyone panic, it's a ghost.
No,
about 90% of the time it can be explained away by something natural, whether it be glitches in the systems or electrical faults or just other natural things that can be explained. So yeah, it's all those non-explainable things that we look into.
If when it's when you can think of a rational explanation for it, are you a bit disappointed? You're like, nah.
No, because it's all part of our job. It's what we do.
Yeah,
we try to explain it. We're looking for answers ourselves, you know, and not every incident is going to be paranormal. So it's just good to just, you know, be able to delete those from the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, just
what are the clients like? Are they generally are they terrified when they contact you?
No, actually, most of them have been just fascinated, interested. A lot of them have been relieved because. We can sort of point to a few things that natural causes, which are things that they can actually solve themselves. They can actually fix those problems by doing a few things like moving beds away from certain walls that might have wires behind them, or just other things, you know, fixing leaky pipes and that kind of thing. A lot of times, if we do decide that the place could possibly be paranormal, which is very rare, we can usually assure them that the entity, if it is there, doesn't seem to be negative or dangerous in any way, you know, wouldn't hurt them, just doesn't seem ominous or life-threatening.
We haven't encountered anything that's been particularly dangerous or anything like that. It's a lot of the time it's about empowering the owner of the house to take back ownership, because when they feel that there's something else in the house that doesn't belong... it's kind of like having someone sitting in your living room uncomfortably and you don't know who they are. You kind of want them to go, but you've got no way of telling them to leave. It's much like that. You feel sort of trapped within your own home as such, and what we do is we sort of help homeowners empower themselves to drive out things, sort of take back ownership to say, well, look, get out of my house. We don't want you here.
Okay.
You're not welcome within these rooms. So... and that helps to reassure them that they are the owners and the masters of their home.
Okay, how does one do that? How do you take back the ownership?
Well,
it's just letting them know that perhaps it's the electrical current or something.
Well, it's possible if we can find rational explanations. Yes, if we find that there is something that is potentially haunting the home, then it's about getting the homeowner to flush them out, basically. Just like telling a person to get out of your house that you don't want there.
Mm-hmm.
It's much the same as that. It's you're the owner of the house, you're the occupant, you live there now. Whatever is infesting the house or is inhabiting the house that you don't want, you just tell it to leave. And it's about being forthright and believing that you want it to leave. And that usually empowers the homeowner to cast the spirits out as such.
Have you had this happen before? Have you needed to do this?
We've assisted people to doing that. We also have people within the team who can perform spiritual cleansings of homes.
Could you talk to me about spiritual cleansing?
We try to embrace all sides of this whole paranormal world, whether it be spiritual, you know, technical and all that kind of thing. So we have a couple of mediums in the group who are more sort of spiritual. We have one is Wiccan and the other one is more religious based. And so we try and attack from all angles. They have their own little ceremonies, little rituals that they do, their own little blessings that they do. And the cleansing pretty much just help the spirits, if they are there, just to move on to where they should be going. Just move on to the other side, really.
Mm-hmm.
Just move on. We don't try and ghost bust. We don't try and kill spirits. We basically try to help whatever is there to move on.
Okay. And do they often move on?
Well, afterwards, most of the time, yeah, that we seem to have been successful, but whether it's just another, whether it's a mental state, whether it's a mental thing within the client's mind, that they feel better in themselves, they feel better in their mind, they feel better within the house, they feel that the house is cleansed, they feel that the spirit has moved on.
Yeah.
If they feel better, that's what matters. To us, it's the client that matters. It's how they're feeling. It's not about... We're there to research ghosts and spirits and whether they exist or not, but it's up to the client. It's the client's comfort is what matters.
Okay.
It's often difficult to prove with 100% certainty that there was something there to begin with, and that whether that something is gone.
Yeah.
So it's as Mike says, it's mainly about ensuring that the owner of the home feels safe and comfortable within their own home. And we have had reports come back from clients to say that they feel like the place is lighter and feel like a weight has been lifted from the property, that the children are sleeping easier and that type of stuff. So it's whatever it is, it seems to work.
Yeah, so we do try these things because we like to try all things. We don't like to leave anything out, but it's more for the client's benefit. If it helps them, then it's worked.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And for when the spirit is there, is it usually just an uncomfortable feeling? Like, as you said, it's never dangerous, though, is it?
We haven't encountered anything that could be dangerous. Within the paranormal community, there have been reports across the years of certain types of entities that are considered demonic or elemental, which can get very territorial or be out to abuse or harm people. But we yet to encounter anything that was anything more than sort of residual or just mischievous. I don't think we've ever...
I mean, the main theory is that ghosts were, in the past, humans. Just humans that have passed away. So you get bad humans, you get good humans. You get violent humans, you get nice humans. So, I mean, it just makes sense that if they were to die, then if there is a ghost remaining, then that would be have the essence of that person. So there could be a nasty ghost, which could be violent.
Yes, fair enough. Can you tell me more about any interesting investigations that you've particularly done?
They're all interesting in their own way. Every case is different.
Any specific memorable cases?
One we did recently in New Lynn was a private house, and the family there, they were all experiencing things, so it wasn't just put down to one person. There was the daughter, the father, the son.
What sort of experiences were they having?
They were seeing shadows, they were apparitions in their homes, they were hearing voices, they were hearing things being dragged across floors, bangs and crashes. They were seeing people sitting on their couches and then disappearing. The doorbell would ring at the same time every week.
Really?
In a tone that doorbell doesn't actually ring. It's set to a certain basic tone, and it was ringing a different sort of tone that it isn't actually made to ring. Things like that. So we went in there, and we spent a couple of sessions there. One, a three-hour session just to initially meet the people and just have a run around the house and just check out a few things. And then we felt that there was enough there to warrant another investigation because it just seemed quite interesting. There was something, we did actually feel there was something there. And the stories were so clear, and the fact that the whole family were experiencing these things led us to believe that there was possibly something going on there. So we decided to do an all-nighter. So they went away and stayed at a friend's place. We had the place to ourselves all night. And we had a few interesting things happen. A few of the investigators, myself included, were touched.
You were touched?
I was lying on the daughter's bed and had my arms up above my head, and I had the sensation of long hair being draped across my arm, from one arm straight across the other, and I could feel the long hairs going through the hairs in my arms. And it was definitely long hair. It was like somebody had their head above me sort of moving across, and the long hair was just draping across my arms. And I could feel it. It was just...
What did you do?
I just jumped out of the bed. I leapt off the bed and started taking photographs, but that's all I could do. I couldn't see anything there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that really shocked me because I'd never felt anything like that before. I am a bit skeptical about all this, and it was something that definitely did make me think and definitely made me jump up and feel a little bit of shock. We also had a bit of an EVP session, which is a voice session where we can basically record and try and communicate with the spirits, and that lasted for well over an hour, and we managed to get quite a few what we thought were answers. We were asking questions and we were getting replies in the form of knocking, and that lasted for an hour, and we got quite a bit of information from that. Whether it was legit or not, whether it was actually a spirit communicating, we don't know, but there were no other knocks outside of those questions and answers, and the replies were like straight after each question, dead on.
Really?
And we even confirmed each answer as they happened. So
no, we recorded, the whole thing is on...
It's all recorded.
We're all recorded on audio, and you can visually see on the waveforms of the audio the knocks, which seem to be, strangely, they don't seem to be coming from any particular direction. They are just knocks out of thin air as such.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they definitely correspond to the questions that were being asked. It was one knock for yes, no, knocks for no. Mm-hmm. And if a question was repeated, the knock would repeat. And if the question was rephrased differently to ask the opposite, the knock wouldn't happen. So,
what sort of questions were you asking?
We have the standard sort of questions like, can you give us a name? You know, did you used to live here? You know, can you tell us about yourself? With this one, it was because it was just a pretty much a yes or no sort of thing. We couldn't get any much information. We had to do it by spelling out names. We found out that the boy's name, if the spelling was correct, was called, his name was Jonathan Lockley. He was 10 years old. He died of an illness in the house back in the 60s. The fact that he was could see us in the room, he could tell us where we were in the room, and this kind of did fit in with the descriptions of the short shadows that have been seen around the house as well. Short, childlike shadows have been seen around the house as well. So it kind of did fit in. Basically, we talked to him for over an hour, and
it's very slow going when you're communicating through knocks. And
going through the alphabet to find the name.
Going through the alphabet, yeah.
So we're, at the moment, we're sort of trying to do the reset, the back research to try and figure out who this Jonathan Lockley was, and if he was a child at the time in this area, what school did he go to? So it's a matter of just fitting all the pieces of the jigsaw together and just.
Absolutely amazing. Were you not terrified at the same time?
No, it was fascinating. It was fascinating because we were confirming everything as all the answers he was giving us, we were able to confirm. So it was almost like we were having a conversation. It was a long process, and it would have been nice to have done it with our voices, but you got to take what you can get. And whether it actually was a spirit communication, we don't know, but it's still, the timing was right. Everything did kind of fit in. We were able to record it and listen back to it, and it just seems to me that there was something there, but yeah, it just seemed a bit too convenient. And
do you have any other theories about what it could have been? Or?
Well, at least there was saying, we had four people in a room at once, three sitting on a bed, one standing up. So there's potential for noise contamination there. If you've got people sitting on a bed, springs, it can make noises. This one, the knock was very consistent, so it wasn't like it was a changing type of sound. It was, when I was reviewing the audio and looking at the waveform, you could see visually when the knocks were happening.
It was exactly the same
every time. Sometimes it was a little bit fainter than others, but it definitely looked the same. I mean, the only thing I could think of would be someone listening in, either outside or downstairs in the property, that could be knocking. But having said that, I wasn't in the room when all this was occurring. Mark was, and three of our other investigators. I was in the lounge next door, and I could hear none of this. I was monitoring on the cameras, so I could see them all, but I couldn't hear what was going on in the room. And so I was sort of wondering why they were taking so long in the room. I could see them, and I could see that they were involved in some sort of conversation, but I couldn't hear anything that was going on. So to me, that means that it wasn't someone knocking on the walls, because if I couldn't hear it in the very next room, one door away, then no one else is going to be able to hear it downstairs or outside.
And you know what you were saying, it wasn't coming from any direction.
No, we were actually struggling with it, because I was standing up and the girls were sitting on the bed, and the knocking would sometimes come from behind me, then it would be above me.
Oh, so it would
below.
Change. It would necessarily change.
It was all around.
Direction.
It was basically just floating around, and we couldn't pinpoint it. I had a parabolic audio dish with me, which can amplify sound, which was probably no good in this situation because it was in an enclosed room. So there was a bit of distortion, but I couldn't pick up which direction it was coming from. It was just everywhere. It wasn't like somebody was in one place tapping. It was very unusual. Yeah.
Mm. This is amazing.
Yeah, that was
absolutely terrifying, but amazing at the same time.
Oh, it's fascinating. It's a good buzz, and you get all adrenalized. And
so, what did you do after the conference? What did you find out about Jonathan?
Well, if the facts are right, his name was Jonathan Lockley, 10 years old, died of an illness, living in there. He used to live in that room. That room was his room, I think he said, back in the 60s. He liked watching television. He enjoyed being around the people that live there now. He liked the son, the young son, and wanted to be his friend. He could see the people in the house.
He wasn't allowed downstairs.
Wasn't allowed downstairs in the basement. He didn't say why. He was just told not to go down there.
And there'd been no reports of anything happening downstairs specifically. No. That was, the client has said everything happens upstairs, nothing happens downstairs. So they kind of confirmed that.
Yeah.
Why is he there?
We don't know. We asked him if he knew where he was, and he said no. And he said that it was all dark.
Does he know he's dead?
We don't know. Like, we didn't
do you,
quite make
do
it
they
out.
Know if he's like,
he seemed like he could see us, and he could see us in the room. He could. Yeah, it was almost like he was having fun with us, and he enjoyed us being there. And it was almost like he was conscious, and he was right there, but in some other dimension, perhaps, or I don't know. He was standing by. He said he was standing by the window, and.
And like, did you approach the window or anything? Or
we were sitting by the window. So
okay.
He was over by the window. I was standing by the television set, and he just seemed fascinated with us and having fun with it. And but he was quite scared where he was. Apparently, he said that he didn't like where he was. He said there were people all around him, and they weren't family. They weren't friends. He didn't know who they were, which we kind of felt a bit, you know, emotional about, because it was almost like he was. We couldn't help this person. This young boy was in some place. You know, he was confused. He didn't know where he was. It was dark. He was amongst strangers who he didn't know. So, if it was in fact a real person, then it would be quite frightening for him. So, yeah, it can actually get a bit emotional.
I'd say so.
Listening to it, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just single. Like just when you found out his age, you just go, "Are you one?"
Yeah,
two?
It was. We were counting. Yeah.
Okay. God, his net is. His two names must have taken forever.
A, B, C.
So has that been one of that sounds absolutely so intense. Is that would that be one of your more intense sort of investigations that you've done?
So. I mean, that was because we knew it was happening at the time, so we could take it further. A lot of the stuff we get, we don't realise we've captured something until we go back and listen to the audio.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's sort of, yeah, in the days or weeks following the investigation. So, quite often it's difficult. Some of the places that we investigate, we can't get back to afterwards, because not only do we do private residences, we also do public sort of historic buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those, it's kind of a one-off. We can get in there for a few hours or an evening, but... we may not be able to get back again to confirm some of the audio that we've received. So, but
with Jonathan, what's the next step now?
Well, there's only so much you can do, really.
Are you going to send in like a medium to cleanse the house, or
no? Because we've asked the people, the owners of the house, and they're actually very happy to live with him.
Okay.
Because he's no threat to them. He's not some nasty spirit. He's basically just happy to be with them. He wants to be their friend, and that just helps the occupants of the house to be a bit more at ease with it all, and they're happy with him there, and they don't mind. They have no problem with that. As long as they know who he is and there is no threat, they're happy to live with him. So now that the channels of communication have been opened, it's up to them. If they want to communicate with him, they can try.
Did you speak to the son who the boy wants to be friends with? Did he have any specific encounters with Jonathan?
He's seen Jonathan. We spoke to him on the initial one. We didn't see him on the second time round, but he has seen shadows, short shadows. Yeah, he's seen sort of about a meter high shadow going around the place.
Have you had other direct communication experience before?
Not direct.
I did get touched at the Smith and Coe investigations when we were in the Smith & Coe building downtown. They've got several levels within their building, and we were upstairs in a women's club up there, which sort of had a large sort of hall entertaining area. And we were asking the spirits, there was me and two of the ladies on the team, Cal and Barbara, asked the spirit to touch one of us. And so I touched Cal first.
What was the feeling, do you know?
Well, I mean, I can only talk about the feeling that I felt, because I was the third person to get touched. But the feeling to me, it was very slight. It was just a very light touch on the back of the neck. It's like someone touching sort of a single hair on the back. But it seemed to happen as we were asking it to, after it had touched Cal, then it touched Barbara, and then we said, well, go touch Matthew. And not long after that, it's like, well, I can feel something touching the back of my neck. Now, It could have been a spirit. I'm a bit of a skeptic, so I could also put it down to just being sort of psychosomatic. You're in a room with two people who claim they've just been touched. You want to experience it as well, so your body will attempt to simulate that, or your mind sort of makes you think that you've been touched. So I can't 100% say that it was a spirit, but it felt like somebody touched me on the back of the neck. So it was interesting. Mm. It sort of hit me on cue. So,
would you find yourself a lot in these investigations that you would be quite sceptical of the goings on in general?
In general, yes. So, you know, I don't necessarily believe that ghosts are something that are physically present. I mean, we've got a wide spectrum of people on the team who have different beliefs. My personal belief is that ghosts may simply be a human psychological condition, and that we are wired to see what we call ghosts within certain atmospheric conditions. So if we're in a house that has all the hallmarks and traits of a haunted house, that's the type of conditions our fight or flight response kicks in, our visual perception kicks up, and our audio perception kicks up, and we start hearing and seeing things that we may not necessarily normally see. And so that's my personal belief, that it's something to do with us rather than an external entity that we're seeing. But opinions vary on the subject. So.
And how about yourself? Would you be sceptical as well?
Well, I've always been a little bit sceptical, but then things happen. Things happen, and you read about sightings, you read news articles, you see video, and it's all those little things pieced together that just keep the interest going. I've experienced a few things myself in the past which have just keep me enthusiastic about it, and just keep me wanting to learn more. I want to find out if it is just me, if it is something that's in my mind. But then you see things with your eyes, and then you hear things with your ears. So all your senses are picking up on things. So it's just one of those ongoing investigations that everyone's doing for themselves, really, for their own personal benefit, for their own personal closure, I guess, just to find out the answers. Everybody has their own way of looking into it. Everybody has questions. So a lot of people just sit back and don't bother asking the questions and don't actually go out looking for the answers.
That's
just
my personal belief on it, is that, I mean, while I might not necessarily believe in ghosts, I'm willing to have my beliefs challenged. So I'm not just going to sit back and say, well, look, no, it's all a bunch of hooey. If there's a possibility that these things are real, then I want to be in a position to encounter and investigate further. So while I don't believe 100%, I am going out there and trying to find more information on it.
I think we all believe that there is something there. We all know that there is something in it, whether it's mental, whether it's, you know, whether it's actually a spiritual thing. Nobody really knows the full answer. Nobody knows all the answers, but we know that there's something in it. And people are seeing something. They're not all crazy. They're not all drunk. They're not all high on some sort of substance. People are seeing something. So whether it's psychosomatic, whether it's actually a ghost or something otherworldly, we don't know. But it's there's enough being seen and felt and heard and sensed for us to look up and say, well, it's worth looking into.
Mm. People have been reporting ghosts for as long as written history. You go back to sort of Mesopotamia and some of the earliest writings, they mention ghosts and spirits of the dead coming back. And people citing ghosts. I think there's Pliny the Elder, one of the Greek historians or Roman historians, wrote a story about a haunted house where the ghosts of the former occupants were still inhabiting the house. So it's not like it's a modern thing. So there's definitely something that people have been seeing for thousands of years.
Mm. And people in general shouldn't be afraid of ghosts, in your experience, then?
No, I don't believe so. I think it's something that's... It should be... I don't know, it should be... I don't know, just... People should have an interest in it. They shouldn't fear it. They should be fascinated by it. It is a fascinating thing, and anybody that says that life beyond life is not, you know, is not fascinating is fooling themselves, because it is fascinating, really. I mean,
I think Hollywood's got a lot to answer for when it comes to ghosts and movies like Paranormal Activity and those types of things, where it all gets amped up. I mean, some of these, for instance, the Paranormal Activity movies would be an absolute worst possible case scenario of, sort of comparing a light breeze going through your house to a hurricane coming through your house. I don't think that anything like that has ever happened in real life. To that extent, there have been reports in the isolation of things at a much lower scale, but not people getting dragged around their house by unseen forces and getting compelled to do things, and that's taking things to extremes. And I think that's where a lot of the fear of the paranormal comes in. There's certainly a lot of fear of the unknown, of what you can't explain, but unfortunately, it makes for good movies. People like getting a bit of a scare, and they think that that's kind of what ghosts are, but in fact they're not. They're, for the most part, they're quite benign and very, very subtle. But it is always, if you don't understand it, then it is a bit scary having things within your home that you can't explain. So that's why there's groups like ours that are out there to help.
Ooh, spooky stuff. Spooky stuff indeed. Thanks again to Haunted Auckland for chatting to me. You can check them out at www.hauntedauckland.com, or also type it in on the old Facebook and you'll be able to find and read more about them. So thanks again for the two lads for chatting to me. I was tempted to go out and ask them, could I do an investigation with them? But nobody wants to hear a grown man soil himself while recording a podcast. So, well, unless you want to hear that, we can maybe, I don't know, organize something private for you. But we'll move on. Let's move on from this topic.